I'm Vernon Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Justin Kwan, OD, Assistant Professor and Chief of Cornea and Contact Lens Services, Southern California College of Optometry at Ketchum University.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, so the East Bay Area, a couple cities, Fremont for kindergarten through 8th, and Pleasanton from 9th grade onward.
What did your parents do?
My dad worked in the tech industry. He's an electrical engineer by training. Mm-hmm. He kind of moved up, became a manager. He spent the last part of his career working for Qualcomm. And then my mom is a realtor. She spends as little or as much time as she wants doing that.
What got you from cell biology in college to ocular surface disease?
Well, I guess the initial stages was really more how to get into optometry.
I'm kind of working around to that, too.
We'll get around to that. When I was in first or second grade, I got my first pair of glasses. By then, I was already a minus two prescription. Should have probably had glasses sooner. And then it shot up every year. And right now, I'm a minus 10, so super high prescription. So I really liked what my optometrist did for a living. It seems like he always had fun doing his job. And so I kind of put all my eggs in one basket. Even before starting college, I knew I wanted to head towards optometry. Once I graduated optometry school, I decided to do a residency. Mm-hmm. And so didn't quite match to a contact lens program, but kind of stumbled upon a hybrid program in contact lenses and dry eye. Ocular surface kind of became my everyday life for a little while. I was mentored by Jerry Paugh. We did a lot of dry eye projects together, got to network and meet a lot of companies and dry eye experts, both in, you know, the scientific side and the clinical side. And so really morphed into a specialty of mine to not only deliver on the patient care side for patients that have been struggling for years and years, but also contribute to the scientific side, doing collaborative work with folks from all over the country and all over the world. So it's been a true blessing.
What keeps you in research versus private practice?
Here at the university, I feel really fortunate to have mentorship, folks that have been at this game for many more years than I have, and really kind of guiding me, shaping me, and really to bounce ideas off of. And I like that here at the university, every day is a little bit different. I'm not seeing my 12 to 16 patients a day. I get to, you know, teach in the laboratories, teach in the clinic. Get to meet a lot of people and work with students. We have 100 students in every class, and so that's a challenge in and of itself, but it's it makes every day a little bit more exciting. And kind of in the trenches with my colleagues, seeing some really unique cases. As a university, we get referred some pretty challenging folks who really have not been able to, you know, have relief of their symptoms or their vision corrected at other places, and so they're sent in to us. And so I like the challenge of the day-to-day.
Well, you mentioned running your clinic. Yeah. What's it like to run a clinic in academia?
I guess an average eye exam here is going to take a lot more time as we are supervising the students. They check in with us probably two or three times during the course of an eye exam. They tend to do a few extra tests, be a little bit more thorough, and we have a healthy discussion on, you know, what are the possibilities of the diagnoses, how do we want to take this patient at certain points in time to get them the best care possible. Running a contact lens clinic here at the university is not too different than a private practice. I meet with sales representatives, kind of make financial decisions on what contact lens brands I want to stock, how do I want to leverage offering something new and exciting to our patients, and really just a high level of exceptional care within the confines of a relatively slower clinic. We get to have a lot of equipment, technological equipment to diagnose and take pictures, really share with our patients maybe something that they haven't seen in their own eyes before. We have a few more resources than a private practice, but the day-to-day and the finances run very similarly to a private practice.
Why is collaborative research important?
For one, I like to think of myself as pretty well-read in the scientific literature, but there's just not enough time in a day to stay on top of everything. And there are folks doing great work in, you know, Germany, Japan, and Hong Kong, and all kinds of places. And so here in the U.S., working with, 7 other passionate dry eye clinicians, you know, that are in private practice. I get to hear a lot of new ideas. I'm on group text messages with them. I really get to kind of hear them out and do a little bit more digging and investigating myself. That way we kind of push each other to know more and get, you know, cutting edge results. It's kind of like when new treatments or drugs come out, we get to get fresh ideas and feedback from these collaborative researchers right away, instead of just maybe hearsay or waiting till a big meeting. I feel like I'm in constant contact with these folks, and really helps me take better care of my patients. I think that's the end game, is to, you know, whether it's prescribing or diagnosing, or really just even how I communicate to a patient. I'm really grateful for this collaboration with folks.
We'll do something a little different. What do you do for downtime?
All right. Right now, I play fantasy football. I'm in three leagues, and to be honest, that's actually not the worst. I've actually been as many as six leagues, but I really enjoy watching college football on Saturdays, NFL on Sundays mainly. I like playing basketball, volleyball, biking, running. Yeah, watching Netflix with the wife, those kind of things.
Okay, just because I'm a geek, I'm going to have to ask you, do you see that if there is a difference between fantasy football and Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, you'll have to ask my wife on that one. She plays D&D. I've sat through maybe a couple D&Ds. I just couldn't follow, so...
Okay, apart from fantasy football, what's something that your colleagues don't know about you?
I don't know if a lot of them know that I can play piano.
How long have you been playing?
I have for since I was 6 years old, and so classically trained, but I do enjoy playing, you know, top 40 stuff, things I hear on radio. I play for church, like just being creative instead of as structured and sheet music-wise. So, yeah, I enjoy piano.
Did you go through a Suzuki method to learn?
I did not. No.
Okay. So a lot of kids that start out that young.
They do. Yeah. So there was a lady at church who taught piano part time. I started with her, and you know, she taught me both the theory, reading music notes, rhythm, all that kind of stuff. And then after a few years, I transferred to another piano teacher, and yeah, played all the way through end of high school.
Of classic composers, who do you like playing?
Oh, I think I'll have to pick Chopin.
Now, I read that you periodically visit dry eye forums online to see what the patients are talking about. What insights can OD students take away from patient care by reading dry eye patient forums?
So the main forum was Dry Eye Zone, and then more recently I did a project with folks on graft versus host disease on a Facebook support group. Mm-hmm. And in either of these forums and very similar support group type things, patients tend to, of course, be more honest. They feel like it's a safe place. A lot of these are closed groups by invite, not by invite only, but they have to be approved to join as a member. Mm-hmm. So I really get to have this like raw, I guess unbiased, you know, hear how the patient's life, their daily life is affected. Tend to be more severe patients that, you know, are desperate. They've kind of become, in the best way possible, OCD about their conditions. So they might even be more well-read than a lot of optometrists on their condition and understanding the pathophysiology, like what is happening exactly and why is nothing working? What specialists, like rheumatologists, have they seen? How did this, like, advanced medication, was it okay? Did it work? Did they have to use a compounding pharmacy? So I really get this different look at things. And in that forum, I believe a handful of patients have found me, which I'm grateful for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just learn how they talk to each other and what kind of ideas they throw around. And there's definitely things that they mentioned that I've never heard of before. And then once again, I do my own digging on PubMed and the research literature to see, like, is this really justified or is it just kind of like hokey?
Well, is this something like you would urge your students to do? Like,
I think if, like, I found myself in my
students, give them an assignment for, like, you know, tonight I want you to go and lurk on a forum.
I know, right? Like, do some sleuthing. For sure. You know, I think the optometric curriculum right now is, like, very impacted. It's, like, even hard to squeeze into 4 years. But I do see a place. I think in fourth year there's a bit more time to kind of push them to do these like novel exercises. Mm-hmm. And so I would, I think, push them towards, you know, scoping around on forums. And I teach a course called Evidence-Based Practice. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of a, I don't know, a scientific or a guided approach to looking at these comments and kind of cross-checking and seeing, like, hey, this is a need. There's not a lot of publications on social media and how we can leverage that to help us be better doctors, but also help patients at the same time. So I think there's a future in it, but right now I think we're just learning and getting our feet wet. But it is, I think, super helpful for a patient, for a student to hear this set of patients and how they talk about their condition.
There's a lot of specific knowledge required for pharmaceuticals and ocular surface diseases.
Yes.
Should there be a recognized certified optometric specialist?
I think we're beginning to see that. Whether you hop on the LinkedIn or you go to a practice website, there seem to be people establishing subspecialties of optometry. Now, whether that requires an extra board certification or a mandatory residency, I can make a case both ways.
Okay.
But I do believe that there should be established subspecialties of optometry, and that way we can help each other instead of trying to be jack of all trades, master of none, and kind of flailing a little bit. Because I know the, you know, in the interest of the cost of healthcare in our country, I think it would be better suited if folks are identified early and we take that model of preventative care instead of waiting till things spiral out of control. So I think if we take the route of subspecialty and having that awareness in our community, that could go a long way.
What do you foresee your students encountering in dry eye research in the next decade?
I think a low-hanging fruit would be kind of the work I've been doing, a lot of survey-based questions, just trying to understand the patient experience and patient-reported outcomes. You know, randomized clinical trials will still be king, and those are super important. But I think a lot of post-market surveillance is going to start picking up now that we have two dry eye medications, phase four type studies. And I think research can be intimidating for a lot of my students, and it's not a research, there's no research requirement right now for them to graduate, but we do have a research elective, and I really want to support their curiosity. I think that's what all clinicians should have. It's that I'm not satisfied with where I'm at in my career and how this is what I got, you know, to help my patients. I got to be more curious than that. There's got to be something more. There has to be a little, some angle or some nuance that can help them out. So I think as a core quality, I want to develop in my students a curiosity, and in how they pursue research, is for me to be a resource, a mentor to them, and to get them connected. And I think our academy actually does a pretty good job about that, because we have had a special interest group called Fellows Doing Research. So it's kind of just easy peasy, get your feet wet, and then from there, it's like the world is your oyster. You can kind of branch out, get to meet more people, kind of that collaboration we spoke of. Even if you're in a private practice in a rural town, at least you got a taste of research, and then you can make it your own from that point forward.
What's one thing about optometry you would change right now?
I could complain about the regulatory things, but that's okay.
Everybody does.
I guess that's related. I wish that you know, our prescribing privileges were not as limited, and from an FDA standpoint, that we could get more myopia control devices. I have a passion for myopia control, and so yeah, I wish there weren't as many hurdles and red tape to get devices and treatments to patients sooner. Whether they're expedited, because there's a track record internationally. So that's the frustrating thing. If I could change optometry, I would try to get things to patients sooner if I had all the power in the world.
Last question, and we inflict this on everybody. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Oh my gosh. I'm kind of choosing between two things. I've cliff jumped off a kind of a reservoir near my hometown. I was probably like maybe a 40-foot drop, so it's pretty good. And then I've also, this is kind of embarrassing, I bought a grappling hook off eBay one time in college, and I grappled and rappelled down the side of a building. I don't know.
Okay. Both of them are very good. I want to know about the building.
It wasn't our apartment building, so I don't know. College kids do whatever, right?
It was your apartment building in college?
It was, yeah. Just so, a few blocks off the campus at nighttime. We're like, we're going to just rappel. We're going to pretend we're like ninjas, and we're just going to do this.
Okay. Now, you have to tell me the story. So you evidently planned this to some degree because you bought a grappling hook. So how tall was the building?
It was only 3 stories. It wasn't too bad.
Hell yeah, that's okay.
It was actually from the balcony, thankfully. Yeah. So it wasn't the entire 3 stories.
How many of there were you doing this?
Oh, it was just me. And it wasn't like the gigantic grappling hook. I was a little bit disappointed, but it was like sturdy metal. It's just the hooks were like smaller instead of like a larger one. Yeah.
Okay. What were you thinking?
I don't know. We're just bored. I really couldn't, like, we didn't use it for any other purpose, right? Like, it wasn't, like, an activity for, like, a group team building or anything. No, it was just...
You keep saying that you did this yourself, but you keep saying we, and I'm just kind of like, so you...
Oh, because, like, I have roommates, so I think, like, I like, watch me or, like, make sure I didn't kill myself. But
okay.
Other than that, we did everything together, the four of us.
I was just kind of wondering where the motivation came, because something like this when you're in college is usually a snowball.
Yeah. This isn't crazy, but, you know, you would roll watermelons down hills. Berkeley is a very kindly place, right? Yeah, there's, like, a lot of hills and a lot of crazy people, myself included.
So this was part of the Berkeley vibe, then,
to
rappel down the side of your apartment building.
Yeah.
Did you scare anybody?
No, thankfully it was on the inside of the building, so I don't think any of the neighbors were aware. There was a swimming pool that was filled in, so, I mean, it was just a concrete courtyard, yeah.
Okay, that's got to be one of the best ones I've heard in a while.
Okay, good. I try.
Okay, Justin, that is all the questions I have for you. Thanks for taking your time and to talk with me today.
Great, thanks for doing this with me.